The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California. I'm sitting here at Studio 316, and I got a hellacious podcast for you today. I was going to talk to Ted Fowler, 316, down there in South Texas. Ted showed up a day late because he's been working so damn hard, and then we had business to take care of at the ranch, so we didn't get a chance to record a podcast. But I called my good buddy, Court Beyer, from MLW Radio, and we talk about the business of professional wrestling. We break down WrestleMania 25 between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, considered the best match in the history of WrestleManias. We talk about a preview of WrestleMania 33 coming up this Sunday, April 2nd from Orlando, Florida. And I will be watching from Marina Del Rey on my big screen TV, hooked up to the WWE Network. And I am going to keep this open short because my conversation with Court is a long one. And we're going to get to that podcast after we take care of one of the sponsors who's going to keep you out of the doghouse with your girl. Sending flowers is always the right thing to do, even when you aren't in trouble. But I know that sending flowers online isn't always easy to do. Sure, you get hooked in with that $19.99 advertised price, but then when you get to checkout, the price is suddenly $100 because of all the shipping and handling and special care charges that get added on. Here's a solution. Books.com. Books are farm-fresh flowers that can last up to 2 weeks. They are cut to order, so they are always fresh and guaranteed to last. Books flowers start at just $40, so they won't break your bank either. And when I say $40, I mean $40. Ain't no hidden fees, no special care, and handling fees. What you see is what you get with the Books. And right now, if you register at Books.com and use my promo code Steve, you'll save 20% off your order and receive free weekday delivery. And if you're looking to earn brownie points with your significant other, then you should register for the Books Just Because service, which lets you randomly surprise someone however many times a year you'd like. You choose the flowers and delivery dates, and the Books take care of the rest. So register at thebooks.com now and use my promo code Steve to save 20% off your order and get free weekday delivery. That's promo code Steve at thebooks.com. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I'm going to age cricket on a popsicle stick. I'm rolling sound 2 seconds in. Check one, two. Court Beyer, you got your ears on?
I do.
Sound loud and clear. I'm not even going to do a sound check on this thing. Hell, I was 2.5 minutes deep in the conversation with Court, and all of a sudden my Skype goes belly up. Court, I'm telling you, I've been doing this for a little over 3 years. I've got the most unprofessional podcast in the history of podcasting. It does fairly well for me, but nonetheless, it's a one-man cluster muck. Today you're involved, so it's a two-man. How are you? I know you're getting ready to go down to Orlando tomorrow for the WrestleMania 33 festivities. You'll be there, and you're taking your podcast with you. What's up?
Well, you know, I'm trying to just stay down there full time, as we talk about often. This is the biggest rib in the history of ribs. But yeah, we're doing Wally Mania, our third year doing it. And MLW Radio Live does a panel down there on Thursday night at Tier Nightclub, $15 to get in. And we're going to have a who's who joining us: Jim Ross, Eric Bischoff. The New Japan Pro Wrestling Squad will be in full effect with a meet and greet with two of their top-ranked junior heavyweights in Ricochet and Will Ospreay, along with the Bullet Club's Gorillas of Destiny, plus Dave Meltzer, MVP, Kevin Sullivan, Noel Foley will be the official bartender, so that's something. And JR will be in the house. We're going to be we're happy to have JR there, lift his spirits after a very tough week or so. And Wale will be performing, and it should be a lot of fun. Jamie Iovine, will be DJing, and it's going to be a great time. And it's this Thursday, downtown Orlando at Tier Nightclub.
How in the wide, wide world of sports did you get Noel Foley to be the bartender?
You know, that's a good question.
That's a good get.
she came out. She's come out all 3 years now. She went in Dallas. She went to San Jose. We said, let's do something this year, actually formally with you. And so we came up with this, and she was down to do it. So it's seriously, this is kind of like the Star Wars bar scene in the cantina, where you have every walk of life in the universe of wrestling congregate. And it seems to work out every year. It's a lot of fun. And if you want tickets, you can go to MLW.com, or you can buy them at the door. We'll be selling them online up until door time. You can just show your phone and we'll scan it. $15 gets in at MLW.com. But yeah, it's a really eclectic mix of just about everyone that's, you know, from Dave Meltzer at a nightclub to Eric Bischoff. So it's a lot of fun. And then we're going to have a New Japan panel talking about their upcoming expansion into the United States in your neck of the woods in July, on July 1st and 2nd. So that's going to be an interesting topic to discuss.
So how's Dave Meltzer in a setting like that? Because I really enjoy talking to Dave. He's such he's been doing this forever, been covering the business of pro wrestling, now mixed martial arts as well. Obviously a huge student of the game, a big fan of the sport or the business, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, sports entertainment. So how is he in that setting? Because, you know, Dave is a very smart guy, but seems to be somewhat of a loner. Does he mix with everybody and get along like gangbusters?
Oh, hell yeah. He's probably the most requested photo all the people I'll always list. Dave is probably at the top, because you don't expect to see him at a nightclub, and he has a great time. I think for him to sit in on this panel, because there was a time when I remember Gary Hart telling me once upon a time, Jim Cornette, I think, tried to bring Dave backstage in the late 80s to a show, and Gary wouldn't allow it. You know, he was just like, no, no, no. This guy was – he had death threats at certain points in the 80s and stuff, because it was what he was doing and reporting on the inner workings of the business were – it was taboo, and a lot of people didn't like it. And they were they thought he was going to endanger the business and expose the business. And now he comes out, and all of the guys in the VIP green room and all the fans out there just love him. So for him, it's probably been such a unique journey, because he's gone from the guy that was on the outside to the guy that is just universally loved. And really, he writes basically the Wall Street Journal on a weekly basis on the business. And I learned a lot from his newsletter since I started subscribing when I was a kid, and I was like 15.
Well, I mean, Jesus, man, way back in the day, we used to travel down the roads, me and Flying Brian, and of course, Brian was always ahead of the curve when it came down to, you know, having his ear on the ground, trying to get any kind of intel that he could, you know, inside information. And so back in the day, as I've said before on the podcast, you know, the sheets were kind of, you know, they were kayfabe. You know, if you read them, you kind of kayfabe that you did read them. But man, if you're trying to get up in the business or ahead in the business, man, you could find out a lot of stuff that the office wasn't going to tell you, no one else was going to tell you, none of the boys knew. So they had some sources, they had great opinions, and, you know, Dave Meltzer helped shape the careers and get a lot of guys pushed just because based on his recommendations. So his opinion is well thought of, or highly thought of, or at least highly respected by pretty much everybody that has something to do with the business.
Yeah, I mean, he really is the guy that has a lot of influence. And in terms of, you know, if he puts over a match, it really can make a guy. But he doesn't throw out those five stars very often. So, you know, you really know that you're being critically assessed by him. And he's seen about everything out there.
Hey, man, speaking of five-star matches, I recently watched part of a five-star match with Adam Cole, the Young Bucks, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, and Matt Sydal was in this thing. It was at PWG. It was some time ago, but I just saw a few clips as I had Adam Cole from New Japan on my show. And so I believe Will Ospreay was a part of that match as well. So my question was, did you say that Will Ospreay is going to be a part of your event as well?
Yes, he's going to be on the panel. He's part of the meet and greet.
Tell me about this kid. Man, I love his work. And you talk about a youngster. When about a year ago, a year and a half ago, whenever you had that match with Ricochet that everybody's going crazy for, it could have been a little bit stiffer, but I mean, it was fantastic. I loved it. The timing, the precision of it was off the charts. It was like nothing I had ever seen before. And the kid has improved his work since then. So, God dang, what a bright future with this kid. And it looks like he's falling out of his frame. What's the story with this cat? Are we going to see him in New York, or what does he want to do?
I think so at some point. He's a guy that just he just had it. You know, like Kurt Angle, like instantly had it. Will Ospreay instantly has it. And that's so unique to see a guy that's so quick to get it. And now he's getting his seasoning in New Japan. And he's a key player for New Japan when you look at their expansion in the U.S. To keep a guy like him, to keep a guy like Kenny Omega is critical because they speak English. They can go. They're very marketable over here. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few years with guys like that, Ricochet, all these potential free agents and how they – I mean, they now more than ever can use one company against another. It hasn't been like that since like 2000, 2001. So Ospreay, Ricochet, these guys, they got it made.
So what about the state of Ring of Honor as a promotion if WWE continues to hire these stars away from them?
Yeah, that's going to be challenging. Ring of Honor is facing a lot of challenges in 2017. They have to repopulate the roster, which is never fun, but you know, creates new opportunities for young guys. They also they have a partner, New Japan, who they do talent trades with, kind of similar to WCW and New Japan back in the day. What do they do with New Japan coming on the scene in the U.S.? They were, in a lot of ways, responsible for some of Ring of Honor's biggest gates over the last few years. And how does that impact their relationship? Does it impact their relationship? Because you got to think it does. And you also have New Japan. They have a show every Friday with Jim Ross and Josh Barnett on Access TV. So right there, they're in millions of homes on cable TV. I mean, they're really kind of built right out of the gates better than any company to hit the market in a big way. And Ring of Honor might feel the sting of that. Not from just WWE, but also New Japan. It's crazy.
So in Orlando, you'll be talking with people from New Japan about their expansion?
Yeah, we'll be talking about the U.S. expansion, their experiences, Will Ospreay's experience with Vader. They had a back and forth online and also a match, as well as just being a part of the New Japan ascension as this company's reemerged after several years of some tough business. And George Carroll, who's the director of U.S. operations, will be in the house, and he'll have some exclusives for us on New Japan's future.
Hey, man, you brought up a name there. You said Big Van Vader, and
yes,
he had some going back and forth with Will Ospreay, and that sprung directly out of the match that I mentioned between Ricochet and Will Ospreay. Vader just thought it was just way too light, blah, 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 blah. So they get into exchange, they end up working a match. Obviously, the match is a work, and both guys are on the same page. Man, I didn't think or I didn't see the match, but, you know, in the past few months, you know, Big Van Vader, Leon White dropped, you know, the information that, you know, the doctors didn't expect him to live, what, another 2 years, given the fact that he has congestive heart failure. Yeah. How did this match take place? Did you see it? Because I did not.
The UK match, I saw clips of it. And I understand that the finish wasn't exactly as they had hoped it would go down. I guess Vader might have been a little challenging on what to do there. You know, it happens. You know, those kind of things happen in the business. And
what happened?
I guess there was just some pushback on what they had agreed upon. And I guess Will Ospreay can elaborate more than I can because I wasn't there for it. But it seems like they, you know, sometimes guys aren't on the same page for a finish. And usually the star wins those battles in these kind of cases because they kind of have some of the leverage. So you know how that could go.
Well, I guess Will can elaborate that there in Orlando at your show. So I would be interested in hearing that. Where can I listen to this audio? How do I listen to your podcast? I don't listen to any podcast, Court. I don't want to copy anybody, but I'm going to listen to what Will Ospreay says. How do I find your damn podcast?
You go to MLWRadio.com, and we have podcasts from guys like Jim Cornette, Tony Schiavone, Bruce Pritchard, MVP, ex-WWE writers. We really have a little bit of something for everyone on our network.
You ain't got hot about it. Jesus
Christ.
I'm just kidding. Hey, you brought up Bruce Pritchard. How's that show doing? He was a guest on my show several months ago. It's always a kick talking to that guy, and all of a sudden his show comes from the ashes, and man, it's one of the hot topics in the podcast world right now, something to wrestle with.
Yeah, it really is. He's done a great job. I mean, he's always been a great storyteller. I remember when I was on the writing team and you could just ask him some crazy story. And he always would give you a nice long, he has a folksy delivery, you know, when he tells a story. And you're just sitting there captivated by it, whether it's about Vince or just what happened with the polka dots with Dusty. it just is always interesting.
Well, and so, plus, he's got an impersonation for everybody that he speaks about. So when you can listen to him is one thing, but when you can watch him, it's a whole different thing. Like you said, when you're there asking him all these questions or he goes into story mode, because he's got a full-blown impersonation of everybody in the business.
He certainly does, and he's been there for it all. I mean, he started with Vince in 87 and finished up right after WrestleMania 24 in Orlando, and worked for Houston beforehand and worked for Impact afterwards, and even briefly did some MMA matchmaking, I think, with JBL when they did a little something called the Viper Fight League. So he's done a little bit of everything, but he's been at the highest level, the right-hand man of Vince for many years in many pivotal moments in the history of the company, from its highs to its lows. And so, we talked last summer, and I said, hey, let's give it a go. Let's see what we got here. And we all thought, well, maybe I'll do about 20,000 downloads, 25,000 downloads. It's right now doing about 300,000 to 400,000, which is pretty awesome compared to what we thought it was going to be doing. So I'm really thrilled for Bruce to have found this new way to connect with the business and also share a lot of stories with fans.
Yeah, and they're talking about old school stuff. And one of the things on my social media account, I'm Steve Austin BSR on Twitter and Instagram. I had heard that they were talking about the WrestleMania 13 match at Chicago between myself and Bret Hart.
Right.
And I didn't get a chance to listen to the entire podcast. I didn't listen to the podcast because I don't listen to my own show.
Well, just admit you listened to the part about you getting put over.
No, I didn't hear it. No, but I think he was bringing up the thought that there was a no color policy in effect when we did that match, and that is correct. There was a no color policy. I just want to go over this again. I broke that match down a year and a half ago. But anyway, we were in the finish room, myself, Vince, and Brett. And Vince is laying down the finish. He says, "Hey, man, you guys go out there and do whatever you want." And this is, court. When guys, we called some of it in the ring. We had a fishbone laid out, but the finish was Vince's. And so sit there and say, "Okay, man, that sounds good." And we both walked out to the ring. Went our separate ways. I sidled back into Vince's office. I said, "Hey, man," I said, "you sure about that finish?" He goes, "Oh, God dang, Steve, I'm telling you, it'll work. Just trust me, it'll work." I said, "Good enough." So I walked back out the ring, and, me and Brett were having a conversation, and, he said, "Hey, man, if I was you, I think you need to," someone just drove by on a motorcycle. You can hear everything in this rental house. He said, "Man, if you're going to pass out in a sharpshooter, you need to have some color." I said, "Man," I said, "I don't know about that," because I didn't have any stroke. Nonetheless, we end up getting color, and I bled like a stuck pig, and it was just a little bitty-ass cut, but it worked wonders. And that final picture, that iconic image of Stone Cold passing out in that sharpshooter, would have never happened had it not been for Brett's idea, and he was right. And that match helped make me, but that color really helped make me. And Bruce was mentioning something about the heat afterwards, and there was no heat afterwards. No one ever said anything to myself, or I never really asked Brett this, but I'm almost positive that no one asked or griped at Brett. Was mad at him for us getting color. He was the leader of the match. I pretty much called the match, and we both knew what we were doing in the match. But, as far as the color policy, no color policy in effect, we got color, and it went gangbusters. Because it was so effective, nobody gave two flying Fs about the color. Now, the match that followed us, I believe that was Undertaker and Sid, had to work in that blood, and it was a hell of a match to try to follow. But there was no blowback or no heat on either Brett or myself because we knocked it out of the park. Now, had we went out there and crapped the bed and not won over that crowd in Chicago and not accomplished the double turn, then I can probably guarantee you there would have been hell to pay. But just to add on to whatever Bruce said, there was no heat that came back on Brett or us or myself, and the match was a tremendous success.
Right, and there's always going to be a double standard when you look at these things. If it gets over and you're made from something like that, the promoter's always going to look the other way. If someone on the other card, match one, gets color, their ass is getting chewed out, fined, maybe fired.
Hey, I was talking with Adam Cole just a few weeks ago. I had him on two episodes back-to-back. He was running a pro wrestling gorilla shot, and he just had some surgery done on his forehead. They wouldn't let him work that shot, but he came by the crib, and we had a great conversation. He is only 27 years of old. His kid's a world-class worker, been in the business about 9 years, and we were talking about color. And to me, he's an old-school guy in a new-school business, and him being, you know, 27 years old, a young cat, but a veteran. And he's a guy that still believes, you know, in color in certain matches for the importance of an angle. And we were talking about the political ramifications, all the corporate structures, all the corporate money. What are your thoughts? I mean, certainly we know about the hazards, HEP, AIDS, anything, you know, but if you're testing your guys like UFC fighters are tested, Court, what are your thoughts on blood in today's game of sports entertainment?
I think if you're doing your due diligence, you're not being reckless, and you're not doing, you know, brawling into the crowd with color, you can do it. But yeah, you got to be careful with it. I think it can add a dramatic effect to a match. You know, I don't want to see blood every night. I mean, no. That was part of the appeal of ECW as an attraction, but also after a while, you became numb to the blood in ECW because it was everywhere. But selectively, it can work, especially when you go long periods where you haven't seen it. Then you get it, and it's like, wow, that's cool. So you got to be careful, and I think there's a place for it. And look, I'd rather see people blade than do it hard way. I've seen hard way in WWE in the last year or two. I'm like, yes. God, man, I don't want to see hard way. And I know that's old school, but I don't want to see it. I'd rather see someone use a blade. But, you know, the funny thing is there's going to reach a point where it's going to be a lost art in trying a blade. And who's going to teach it to you? Because the generation that used to do it, they're not doing it anymore. They're not in the ring. So who's teaching you how to blade? That becomes a real problem.
Yeah, but no one really teaches you how to blade. You know, you get caught up in your first job because, you know, the promoter or the booker says, hey, man, we need some color on this. Hey, man, well, how do you do it? Well, here's how. And you just kind of go out there and do it yourself. And then as the years go by, your Brodies, your Dusty Rhodes, you know, those guys with those vertical scars. I mean, you know, I always like to go horizontal, but so they don't necessarily teach you that, you know. It's just kind of one of those things you pick up as you go down and do those blade jobs.
Right.
But is going back to getting color and from a hard way standpoint, because you're trying to protect yourself from the corporate scrutiny rather than using a blade, at the end of the day, it's the same damn thing. It's just it's both are barbaric ways to make yourself bleed, but those right. are the two accepted methodologies, and the only two that I know of, the blood packets. There, yeah. In my history of watching the business and in my history of watching pro wrestling, I've seen some people use blood packets, or maybe a condom that was filled with some kind of blood-colored material. But highly ineffective and only used in a few angles that were poorly done and really didn't work. So whether using the blade or the hard way, it's the only way to fly. I don't think either one is any more acceptable than the other one.
No, and the blood packet, yeah, I mean, right away, if you're bleeding, or I should say, if you're sweating, it's late in the match, that's going to get so diluted, you're not going to be able to really see. It's going to look so blurred, and it's not going to work. It's just not going to be effective. And you also risk the fumble of the gimmick.
And there was a fumble in recent 6 to 8 months. It was not good.
No, and now more than ever, with HDTV, you know, you have 1080 out there, you're going to pick up on any little of those things. Those little subtle things are going to be exposed, you know. So blading now more than ever, you got to be careful with, or getting color, however you're going to do it. It's an art, and, you know, it's baptism by fire. You know, when you started doing it, someone did it for you probably the first time or two, and then you figured it out after a while. But, you know, again, it's going to be a lost art, because just doing it, you're going to have someone at least that's going to give you the 411 in the locker room. Those guys in the locker room aren't going to be around much longer. I've been in locker rooms where you see guys like Sabu explain it to someone, and you know, that it is important to understand the do's and don'ts of it, you know, how not to overcompensate. Like you said, for your cut at 13, it wasn't this big gash and you got great color. It was a small one, right?
Oh man, you can overcolor, and let's just call that, or bleed too much, and then it becomes a bloodbath and becomes gory. And don't get me wrong, there is the match that is warranted for, but for that match, it was a classic. That was a classic style match, and it was a lot of blood, but it wasn't like a bloodbath. But you can go overboard, and some guys have. And when you just got that thick film of thick blood, and it's starting to coagulate, but it's still gushing pretty hard, and it's almost shooting out like a stream, that's going into the gory side. So there is that level of like 1 to 5, of, you know, 5 being the worst, 1 just being a little bit. So you don't need too much. But let's shift gears. Let's get off the blood. Let's talk about Orlando. Because
yes,
this is a huge event, WrestleMania 33, back in Orlando for what, I guess, the second time.
Yeah, 24 was the last time, and now they have a huge presence with the WWE Performance Center and NXT. It's a whole different world. They kind of run that town in a lot of ways.
So the Hall of Fame is going to be Friday rather than the Saturday before WrestleMania. You know what? I think that's actually a good call, because I don't know what they're doing Saturday, but sometimes, you know, well, I've been in the Hall of Fame in 2009. I've been to a lot of them since then. I love going to the Hall of Fame, but some guys or some gals just get a little long-winded and caught up in the moment and just reliving, going down memory lane, and it just turns into a long, drawn-out affair, and by the time you get out there, you know, a lot of the guys just kind of want to chill, think about their match. I always wanted to have a cocktail or two, think about the match, you know, and get to sleep. But sometimes those things run so damn long. I like the fact that it's going Friday rather than Saturday. Do you have any input on that?
Well, they got NXT now taking Saturday. I liked NXT on Fridays to kick things off, and then you have the Hall of Fame on Saturday, so you have a little buffer between the wrestling. But, you know, you'll see how it does. I think ticket sales are pretty damn solid for all things, so I guess this
little...
Well,
tell me about the NXT event. Where is that going to be at? Full Sail?
Yeah, yes. Oh, you know what? No, I think it's Amway. I'm sorry, Amway.
So how many seating is that?
Oh, it's, you know, I don't know off the top of my head. It's where the Orlando Magic played, probably 16,000-18,000.
Well, that should be a sold-out house.
Yeah, and the last 2 years, it's been a very buzzy event. You know, it almost steals the thunder.
Okay, so if you're going to say the NXT match is going to be on Saturday, is Shinsuke Nakamura going to be there?
Shinsuke is going to be at NXT, yep.
Okay, who's he working? Because I've been waiting for this guy to come up to the main roster for a long time, Court. He ain't no spring chicken. It's not like he needs to learn how to work. What is the story with this guy? Do they not believe in him?
Well, you know, he's probably, hopefully, getting ready to transition to the main roster. He's main eventing against Bobby Roode, the champion NXT, and that's going to be the main event for NXT TakeOver Orlando. And this feels like they're solidifying Bobby, and then they're going to start introducing new talent like Aleister Black, who's a hell of a hand from New Amsterdam and has a kickboxing background. I think he has some unique qualities from the CM Punk end of the spectrum. But for Shinsuke, yeah, it's a good question. When do you pull the trigger? He is no spring chicken. They do need depth on the main roster. You do have guys probably heading home for a little bit, like Goldberg, possibly Jericho. And you need to replenish those rosters so you don't have that WrestleMania hangover.
Hang on, let's go back to those names. Let me go back to a name first. You said Bobby Roode. Man,
yeah.
I love that gimmick, the glorious thing. I love the ring music. When are they going to bust that kid out? Again, he's no spring chicken. He's a sound worker.
Yes.
What's the story?
Well, they're in this weird position where they have to – they got to be careful with how many guys they pull the trigger on, because they want NXT to be touring. They're doing the UK in June. They've done stuff like they've wanted to go out in Australia and New Zealand, and they want it to be a viable brand, maybe like a super indie or something like that. So they really want it to have its own identity, and you need guys that are going to draw and guys that have experience. It can't be all green guys. It's not the old OVW model or the even FCW model. They want it to be viable. They want to sell merchandise. They have their own touring department in Orlando. So they're trying to serve two masters, and that's a hard thing to do. I mean, it really is, but they're trying to make it happen.
But does the NXT business spearhead the cost of the NXT Performance Center? I mean, because someone's going to pay for all the development, all the instructors they got down there, overhead, coaches, just the whole thing. So is that what pays for that?
Man, you know, it's obviously subsidizing it, you know, like a lot of ball clubs, they're subsidizing the prospects for Major League Baseball's futures. They're trying to find the next diamond in the rough and groom them accordingly. So they see it as a long-term investment. Does it justify in the end? I don't know. You know, they're not veering from their path. They are very focused on growing NXT and keeping it growing and bigger, but they're going to need pipelines from Japan to the UK to Mexico to the US Indies to keep it going. And that's a big challenge. I mean, there's a lot of great talent out there, but you also – it's a fragile ecosystem. You know, UK is doing great right now, but if you start to go too intense and raid all that talent, you're going to have a scorched earth effect, and all those young guys are going to have no one to work with, and it's going to be like, I don't know, 1984, 1985 again, where it's just like everything dries up, and it's that's not what you want. So you want to be cherry-picking the best but not killing these territories or these regions out there. So it's a challenge for these guys. And they have a lot of guys signed, you know. But the cool thing about the NXT or WWE Performance Centers, they have these like 1 week training camps where they'll bring in, like, Jerry Lynn was just recently right there. And I think it's cool to have all these guys, these veterans, be able to come in there for a week, teach them a trick or two, and then have, you know, that exposure. That's so different from when I was at WWE. You didn't have these guys just come in for a week and talk shop with the younger guys. And I think that that's important.
Hey, man, let's go back to those other two names you mentioned. You brought up Jericho. You brought up Bill Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's going to be Kevin Owens versus Chris Jericho. I don't know where this match happens on the card. Let's get into the card in a little bit. But So do you see Chris Jericho taking a break, taking a breather, going to do his touring with Fozzy, or does he got some other projects lined up?
Yeah, I think he's booked for some tours with Fozzy, and, you know, this is probably his best run in maybe ever. I think he's done a great job. I've been very entertained by what he's done out there with Kevin Owens, and it really just
great chemistry.
The friendship ceremony was tremendous TV. Yeah. I mean, that's something that harkens back to the late 90s where you do some crazy Gaga segment, but it keeps you so entertained. And in this version, it wasn't like a train wreck. It was actually really good. It had a great payoff too. And Chris had done some great work, and he probably didn't plan on staying this long, but it worked out perfectly. The story feels like it climaxed at the right time heading into WrestleMania. It didn't go too long. Just perfectly done. I really am thrilled with that. And a lot of the booking for this WrestleMania, I thought, has been really good. Miz and Maryse and their parodies on Total Divas and doing these little segments on SmackDown has been tremendous. And Miz has really shown something. He's really, to me, going to give guys like Matt Riddle a run for their money for Most Improved for 2017, because he's just killing it on the mic, and his work in the ring is also very good.
Yeah, but I've been talking about that guy for years. You know, he's not the biggest guy on the roster. He's not the most athletic guy on the roster. But you talk about work ethic. I mean, Chris Jericho is a guy you're never going to outwork. The Miz is in that same category. The kid is always trying to reinvent himself, dresses to the nines, always on time, books himself on media stuff. He's great at media stuff. And I always say, man, and this is a credit to Miz, if three-quarters of that roster was trying as hard as Miz, they'd have three-quarters of the roster higher on the level than they are right now, because that kid works his ass off. And his wife, Maryse, has been a great addition to that.
Yes.
She has just perfect facials. She's spot on with her delivery on the promos. I mean, of course, you know, Miz is a 9.5 on a 10 scale out on the promo. He's a tremendous promo, a talking head. His wife is a perfect accompaniment to him. Obviously, great chemistry. They're married. But she comes across as just mean. I can't say the word, but man, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's just a tremendous package together. And the fact that, you know, those two versus John and Nikki there at WrestleMania, John's done it all. So this feels good. This feels different than, you know, just another high profile John Cena singles match. This is going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. And obviously, just because it's an intergender tag, it should be a hellacious spectacle full of twists and turns.
And you got to remember, The Miz has been under a WWE contract for a decade, and for several years he was used and abused and ragdolled. To be able to refresh himself and keep that work ethic and not you see so many guys boo-boo faced and just whatever, and they get miserable and then they want out of their contract. He has basically willed himself into this position with great work ethic, great attitude, and that cannot be overlooked. I mean, a guy that's been in the system that long is just going to become jaded or calcified to it all. He has continued to up his game and doesn't phone it in. He really works hard, and he asks for all the media that he can do, and they love that he can do it because they know that they don't have to hold their breath when you put him on live camera. He's going to always do the right thing, whether it's Conan O'Brien or the Today Show, just like John Cena. And Vince really appreciates and values those kind of guys.
Hey, man, I'll ask you about Goldberg, but I'm going to do it after we take a break, a pause for the cause of the words from the sponsors to keep this show on the air for free twice a week before we go to break. Court, talk about your upcoming show in Orlando and your podcast and your Twitter account.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Court Bauer, CourtBauer. And this Thursday in Orlando, we kick off WrestleMania weekend with a live performance by Wale. We do a live panel with a who's who from the wrestling world, from the highest levels at the executive level to New Japan to just a who's who. And there'll be a Q&A, a meet and greet as well with New Japan stars. And you get it when you do that meet and greet for VIP tickets, a free poster that you can get autographed by those guys. And it's just a great night. Kicks off at 6:30. Doors open then. And we go until the nightclub closes. And it's going to be a fun time. Get tickets starting at $15 at MLW.com. We're also on Eventbrite.com.
Coming right back with Court Bauer. If you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar gives you the pricing information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. From there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new car or a used vehicle. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and there are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers, and over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Hey everyone, this is Sean Wheelock inviting you to check out our new MMA podcast, Sean Funky and the Baddest Man, right here on Podcast One. Every week I'll be with welterweight titleist Ben Funky Askren and the baddest man on the planet, Joe Warren, to take you inside the sport of MMA. So join us every Wednesday for all new episodes of Sean Funky and the Baddest Man. Download and listen at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and subscribe on iTunes.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right, here we go. Back with Court Bauer from MLW Radio. Court, I was going to ask you about one more name. When we took a break, Court brought up an old story he wanted to spin. But first, let's talk about Goldberg. Man, this thing, he's been back. He's been good for business. He's moved the needle. He headbutted a wall on one promo. He started bleeding.
Goldberg. It happens. Talk about hard way. Wow.
that's when color is not good. When you're just talking during a promo, you start bleeding, not good. No. And Bill is a very, very good friend of mine. I love the guy. So anyway, you brought up his name. He's moved the needle. He's back. He's going to do business with Brock Lesnar, the Beast Incarnate. Brock is, I guess, 38 years old right now, maybe he's 39, but just built like a brick outhouse, still just devastatingly dangerous from a shoot or work level, but he can be gentle as a lamb as well. Super, super guy, but to me, the pressure's on these guys because at WrestleMania 20 back in the day in Madison Square Garden in New York City, you know, things didn't go that well, but it's been a long time removed. A chance for redemption. You even think about that match. I mean, how do you see this thing going down, and are you seeing Goldberg take a step away, or will he stay with company and do more big shots?
it depends on what they want to do here. I think they're going to do some smoke and mirrors, just like they did actually with Sting and Triple H, to try to get a little bit more time out of the match.
But when you say smoke and mirrors, tell the people what you mean by smoke and mirrors, because this is not like shugging and jiving or, you know, like, you mean like bring in pieces, guys, interference, and other things.
Yeah, no, you're not going through a house of mirrors, is what I'm saying. You're gonna have some distractions.
Maybe some cameo appearances.
Yep, something like that to augment what you got going on in there. And I don't necessarily think the New World Order is going to come out or Hulk Hogan's going to come out, but maybe this is a spot for like Braun Strowman to make a big impact, because he's right now kind of lurking in the background during WrestleMania, and you know that's a guy that's factored in a big way, so he's going to make a splash somewhere on this show. I really feel that smart money is on that. Where and when, I don't know, but that might be something interesting either during this match or in the aftermath of this match to do something there. I don't know how, don't know when. They don't pay me for that.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that. I certainly thought some bells and whistles during this match, maybe in the form of some foreign objects or some other people. Then again, they could go just for the 10 minutes, just slam, bam, classic, you know, high impact move after high impact move, and then you know there's a finish, or maybe then Strowman comes down. I don't even know if the kid's going to get involved. I hate to try to even predict to put him in the conversation, but you know, I'm looking forward to see these guys tangle. And both very good friends of mine, and I just want to see them have an effective match, a bust-ass match. And I don't need these guys from a fan standpoint or just watching, because I'll be watching here in Marina Del Rey. I don't need to see 20 minutes bell-to-bell out of these guys. I don't. I just need to see some brutality, some violence, and a little bit of storytelling, some emotion, because there's got to be, and a finish, a strong finish.
Yep. Yep, a strong finish, and you know they have a lot of matches on this show, so I gotta think at least a few of these are gonna go short on time. You just have like a ton of matches. I don't see how you don't. And they've conditioned the audience to expect from Brock Lesnar short matches, short violent matches. So I don't think the expectation is for them to go 20. I don't think anyone's clamoring for 20, 25.
But they gotta go more than 30, and they gotta go more than a minute and a half. Correct?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you know, you can't have something like a flash F5 and it's over or something like that. Not right now. How do you do that? You have Paul Heyman at ringside. You could do run-ins. You could do weapons. You could have someone jump someone before the match, delay it, milk it, you know. Neither guy selling for very long is effective, though. You know, if you close your eyes and imagine them selling, either of these guys down selling –
it's got to be an active sell. Both guys got to sell on a back pedal, because you can't die. That's the thing. Neither one of these guys, I mean, they're so big, they're so tough. The respect level, their brutality, their physical nature in the ring once the bell rings dictates that you cannot die. You can register, you can sell, but do not die.
Yeah, I mean, and these matches have been brief. Can they get 7? Minutes? Yeah, I think it goes 7 minutes.
Court, before we went to break, or during the break, you said you had a WrestleMania story from 2006 backstage.
Right.
What happened?
Well,
I don't even remember 2006.
That was the year. That was the year you inducted Bret Hart in Chicago.
Yep.
And if you remember that backstage scene, it was an eclectic mix of people. And a lot of special history was going down, because you had Hulk Hogan inducting Mean Gene, you had Ted DiBiase inducting Sensational Sherry, but you also had Vern Gagne coming in. And I remember when he came through that dressing room and Vince saw him and he opens up his arms. Oh, Vern, good to see you. Now, Vern at this point was struggling with dementia and those kind of things. It was early. You know, he'd still lived for almost 10 years after that. But you can tell he was a little foggy. But Vince gives him the big hug, and I'm thinking, man, this is history. You see Vern and you see Vince hugging. When you think back to the mid-80s and the history and the bad blood, and everything was on the line, and Vince was going big and going national, and Vern was fighting to go national too, and here they are hugging, and Vern's being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and Vince, always business first and not holding the grudge like people probably think he does. You see them – of course, he did win, so it's easier not to hold the grudge. But, you know, you see Vern out there, and then I remember seeing, you know, Triple H you know, shaking hands with Brett when Brett arrived and seeing Vince with Brett. And this was just early on when Brett was starting to warm up and they were getting back on the same page, WWE and the McMahon family, along with Brett. And so seeing
that. Do the longstanding Montreal Screwjob grudge that Brett held, correct?
Yeah, and if you watch Wrestling with Shadows, which is a phenomenal documentary where you see Brett, his wife, just shredding Triple H and the McMahon family, to see them come full circle, bury the hatchet, and Brett return home where he had his greatest success, his greatest triumphs, was, you know, took time, but it was great to see him honored with being inducted into the Hall of Fame. We also had on that eclectic 2006 Hall of Fame list, and I don't think he's even listed on the Wikipedia page. No, he is not. Do you remember the Fridge was inducted as part of this class?
I do not.
He was. He was inducted, and I remember him sitting on the couch, and he was very sleepy when he arrived. And all of a sudden, he starts to lay down, and you have a skeleton crew at this point for the Hall of Fame. You had like two writers and Vince producing it. Everyone else, Stephanie, everyone's in the audience. And so it's old school WWF style at this point. It's not a big infrastructure backstage, and so Vince basically signs – myself and another writer, Ed Koski, we were the ones handling backstage stuff for Vince. You know, okay, go over this the induction speeches with everyone, make sure they're cool. If they need any help, help them, but, you know, just lay low. And everyone's pretty good. You don't want to be the guy say, hey, can I write your speech? That looks horrible, and people are just going to kick you out of the building. So I just like, hey, you need anything? Cool. No? All right, great. All good. Get to the Fridge. I'm like, man, okay, here we go. And Vincent kind of needled me, like, make sure Fridge has got something good here. I think he was a little concerned. And Fridge, I go, hey, everything looking good for the speech? You need any help? No, man, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just going to take a nap now. And he kind of just lays down and falls asleep for a little bit. And then, you know, we're getting ready for everything. He gets his tux on. And I said, Fridge, you ready? And he goes, yeah, man, I'm a little tired, but I'm good. I was like, sure. And I know, because if this guy doesn't bring it out there and it goes terribly wrong, Fridge isn't getting fired. I'm getting fired. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. And I've never been such a big fan of the Fridge and hoping that he pulled it off than I was that night. And he did a great job. He was quick. He was short. He popped the crowd. And that was it. He did a phenomenal job.
God dang, I thought you were going to have some global meltdown for me.
No, well, this was one of those times, I'm not going to bury myself, but no, this was one of those times that actually worked out okay. Of course, in the middle of the live show, Vern decided to get up and go to the bathroom. He didn't do it on stage. He just drifted off and went in the background, and we couldn't find him. And Vince throws off his headset, find Vern, God damn it. So you're looking for Vern backstage, and he came back out later in the show. But live TV, man, you never know what's going to happen.
That bomb was just dropped by Court Bauer, MLW Radio, on a family-friendly podcast of the Steve Austin Show.
Now you're telling me it's the family. We're almost done with the show. Now you say it's the family.
Dude, it's Tuesday, and we're recording this on Monday, so you know it's family-friendly. How many times have I called you on a day when I was having a hard time putting together a podcast? You know my schedule. I'm just razzing you. Hey, I was watching, you know, on WWE and all of the Jesus the sites report on pro wrestling. Everybody's got their top WrestleMania matches in 33 years. And so, you know, there at the number one spot was Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker for WrestleMania 25. They would work the next year in WrestleMania 26. So I said, you know what? You know, let me watch this damn match, see how good it was, because I couldn't remember it. You know, it's back 8 years ago. Yeah. So, you know, I put on WrestleMania 33. I'm watching the WWE Network, which you can get for $9.99. I got it. And so I said, well, I need to watch a few matches prior to this, kind of set the tone to see what the vibe was, because I watched the open. And then I said, oh, okay, there's JBL versus Rey Mysterio. I said, that'll be a quick one, because I could see by the time segment that it was a short match. I said, what are you guys going to do? Sure enough, JBL goes out there, and he cuts a heat-seeking promo. They're in Houston, Texas at Reliant Stadium. There had to have been 70,000-plus people there. It was sold out to the rafters. And then Rey comes out and gets a big-ass pop, and I believe this is for the Intercontinental Championship. and Bradshaw, everybody's just hating his guts. He cuts a classic promo. And then, you know, right when Ray comes to the ring, you know, they're standing there kind of eyeing each other. They hadn't rang the bell yet. And boom, just straight out of nowhere, high kick from JBL right to Rey Mysterio's face. Ray goes down. JBL's on him like a house of fire there for a little bit, and then he's telling the referee, ring the bell, ring the bell. Well, hell, he rings the bell, and Rey Mysterio makes a little comeback, goes on offense, ends up, hits his gimmick finish on him, 1-2-3. Bradshaw gets beat, Rey's Intercontinental Champion. The entire match, well, from start to finish, it was probably with entrances and with JBL's speech afterwards. It might have been 8 to 10 minutes. The match itself really was maybe 40 seconds. That was a classic case of how to have a short match and for it to rock the place, because everybody was in love with Ray. He gets a big win. JBL looks like hell, but he does the favors, and he says he quits there towards the end, but it was highly entertaining. So anyway, that got me in the mood. Okay, let me check out this match between Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. And I've been talking to a lot of people. I was talking to Adam Cole a few weeks ago. I've been talking to some people in WWE. The office wants them to work, you know, from underneath as that underdog. So you've got Shawn Michaels, who wants to challenge The Undertaker because, you know, it's WrestleMania 25. And so he lays down the challenge. And I guess, you know, on their entrances, it was spectacular because Shawn comes down from this hydraulic, I guess it's a big cylinder, a piston, like he's coming down from the heavens. Yeah. And he makes his entrance to the ring, and it's incredible. I mean, it's incredible. And then here comes The Undertaker. He comes standing on a hydraulic, you know, lift, just comes up out of the stage like he's coming from the depths of hell. Jim Ross even says it on commentary. And bam, they go out there. There's the long stare down, and you're thinking, okay, how's this match going to go down? Because you've seen these guys work a few times. You know Undertaker's one of the biggest guys in the territory. Shawn, you know, hellacious babyface or heel, but the smaller guy. So you're thinking, okay, you know, he's going to play the underdog the entire match. I'll be damned. You saw this match within the last few months, correct?
Actually, I watched it last week. I was working in my home office and just fired up WrestleMania. The cool thing about the WWE Network is once you finish WrestleMania, it'll just roll to the next year's WrestleMania. So I started going through a few in the 20s, and I found myself on the same WrestleMania watching the same match last week. And you watch that match now, years later, and you see just how WWE does the spectacle thing better than anyone, and no one can even imagine, let alone afford, what they do. But it's such an awesome cinematic presentation, and the visual of the angel coming from the heavens and this evil monster coming from hell. And just before the match, the tone is set. You're ready for something big, and you know Shawn and Taker, you know they're going to deliver.
And they did deliver back and forth. But it was really because I was really watching which guy was going to have more offense. And I forgot the finish. So, okay, I'll go ahead and spoil it for you. If you hadn't seen it, Taker goes over with a tombstone pile driver out of a moonsault. Jesus Christ, it was incredible. He had already taken one when Shawn skinned the cat over the top rope. Taker yanks him upright and, you know, takes him center ring and plants him. Shawn kicks out of that one. But I was waiting to see which guy was going to have more offense. Okay, so you're thinking, okay, maybe it's going to be 50-50. Or you're thinking, okay, if Shawn's going to do the favors, maybe Shawn's going to have more offense. But because Taker's 6'10", 300, because he's a bigger guy, he's going to have more offense. And the finish is going to be what it is. But I would say that was about a 60-40 if match as far as offense, 60 right. to Shawn, 40 to Undertaker. And there's some stagnant periods or static periods, let's say, you know, when neither guy is doing anything because they're both selling. But Shawn got a lot of stuff in on that match. Whereas, you know, if Vince would have said, hey, man, we really want to see you work from underneath, it would not have worked.
No, I mean, you really had like the clash of gods there. And it's just you couldn't have that ragdolling Shawn in this case. It wouldn't have worked with the tone and how they had built this thing. You know, they had to have that, like you said, 60-40 kind of dynamic. And it's important for people to in the business, you know, to understand that ratio of offense to defense, and it shouldn't be 50-50. It shouldn't necessarily be like that. Sometimes you need it to go 70-30. It depends on what you're trying to get out of it. That's like a law. That's something that doesn't come up a lot in when you see guys working out matches backstage. They really don't talk about that ratio dynamic that much in the modern era. And it's an important thing, and it keeps the matches different and distinct. It's not just the cutting edge style. It's how you pace it and what you're looking to get out of it.
And those guys put on a hell of a show, and there was tremendous false finishes, and getting towards the end, you're thinking, surely that they're not going to kick out of this one. And surely when Taker hit that final tombstone, you knew that was it, because when Shawn kicked out of the other one, it blew the roof off the place because nobody could believe it. But the thing about this match that really struck me was, you're thinking, okay, which one's going to be the heel? Which one's going to be the baby? One's from hell, one's from heaven. You know, so am I going to root for the guy from heaven or hell? It wasn't about that. It was about two guys, two personalities, two characters, two men that were both over to such a high degree, such very highly accomplished workers in the ring with such great sense of timing and trust in each other. And at certain times, you know, throughout Shawn's career, certainly Undertaker wasn't very fond of him back in the day, but, you know, obviously when they got in the ring, or maybe they'd cleared things by the time this match had happened. I mean, there was a lot of mutual respect, even when Shawn was back in his heat-seeking days. You know, when in the early mid-90s, you know, a lot of guys had heat with him, but come time to turn on the main event and go to business, Shawn was as good as it got. So neither guy was necessarily playing heel or face. They just let the match shake out like it did. The fans picked sides, and they had a ball buster of a match. Other thing, Court, as you watch this match, there's no pantomiming, there's no pandering, there's, dare say, almost not even a look to the crowd to try to work these the 70,000 or more people in that Reliant Stadium. They didn't pander to them. They had them. They were doing the work. They were the spectacle. They were the attraction, and they worked the people, and they didn't try to go out and use their eyeballs or, you know, wave them in or put a hand up to an ear. That's not disrespectful to Hogan. I'm just saying, dude, they worked the people by telling the ultimate story. It was a masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, you do get to a point where you're so over that you don't have to do a lot, and you've established yourself, and you can do just little things, and it gets a big reaction, and then you're protecting your body. So, yeah, I mean, they're smart. It's smart to work that style too. What those guys did out there, I mean, you know how that culture in the locker room is, man. They know they had to bring it. They wanted to show they still had it, and they knew the expectations were high. And these guys are big time players that thrive in those kind of high pressure situations. They don't choke. You know, Shawn Michaels is not a choke artist, and neither is Taker. And when they were given that opportunity to go as long as they want and show everyone what they still had, They delivered. They really did.
People ask me, I think it was one of the matches, I think it was 96 when I worked with Brett in the Garden. It was kind of a classic style match. It was a Survivor Series or whatever, and I was jaw-jacking with Brett before the match, and, you know, then we started, and the guy asked me, hey, man, were you nervous? And I was like, no, man, I wasn't nervous. I was pretty much coming on into my prime, and I was ready to rock and roll. When you look at these guys, when Shawn comes down and then he starts walking, they hit his music, and the look on his face, because Shawn Michaels is known as Mr. WrestleMania, the showstopper, and he's a guy that refuses to let anybody outshine him on a pay-per-view, especially a WrestleMania. So when he had that look on his face the whole time, his resolve, that look in his eyes of confidence, I mean, Shawn is, to me, the greatest in-ring performer that's ever been in the history of the business. Then all of a sudden, here comes Taker, and he means all business as well. Of course,
right.
They're playing their parts. But just from a psychological standpoint, both guys were so locked in. They knew the task at hand. And one of the refreshing things that I loved about this match, along with the fact that everything they did was phenomenal, the pacing and timing, you didn't see or hear a bunch of calls.
No, you didn't. You didn't. And they did. I just liked the pacing. The pacing was really good. And it worked to their strengths. You know, just stretched out the drama. And the crowd was into it. You know, you look at those guys, and there's so much to be learned from how they paced that match and built to those big moments. The psychology of that match was fantastic. And, I mean, those guys have worked together for, you know, at that point forever. But they really, you know, in terms of their match, this was a match matched it really head and shoulders above any other their matches, in my opinion. You can go back and maybe look at maybe there was a match in 97 that could maybe get in that ballpark, but I think these guys had more time now to really showcase what they were about.
I think if I remember hearing the story correctly, I can't remember, but I think they were only going to be given 15 or 20 minutes for this entire match, and they kind of both looked at each other and they were like, that ain't happening. So I believe they went over to a pretty large degree, but I don't think anything suffered. I think it was Triple H. Was it him and Randy Orton in the main? I didn't watch the main. But anyway, when you have a match that epic, and because you have two guys who are such legends as Shawn Michaels and Undertaker,
right,
when you go over and you have a five-star classic, the best match in the history of WrestleMania, by a lot of people's opinions, you know, you don't take any heat for that. But they were not going to settle for not being given enough time. They were Shawn Michaels, they were the Undertaker, and they were going to do what the hell they needed to, and they did.
They did. And here's the fascinating thing. Shawn's been retired, has moved on. He's called it a day for some time now. But he just recently said that WWE came calling, and they were interested in putting together a match with Shawn versus AJ Styles for WrestleMania 33 this week in Orlando. This is probably back in the fall, and he passed on the match. But AJ, I guess when these talks were ongoing, had tweeted out a picture with Shawn facing off against himself, AJ, and said, wouldn't that be a dream match or something like that? I'm paraphrasing. And I was like, wow, that must – I remember thinking in the fall, this is all right, that's where they're going. Shawn's coming back. And that was it. There was no more teases. So that could have been such a spectacular match. I think if Shawn was going to come back and face anyone, AJ Styles would have been tremendous. But for Shawn to pass on a big payday and a big match, I mean, you've been there. I'm sure you've been hit up to come back several times. How tempting is it? Because it's so intoxicating, I'm sure, to be pursued and think about getting back on the biggest stage of them all, but then to turn it down. I mean, that has to take incredible self-restraint.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't know, you know, how Shawn feels about, you know, he left out on a real high note. And he's super proud of his work. And if pressed, I'm sure he would say, hey, man, he could still go. And I'm sure he could. But I think, you know, for me, I hung it up a long time ago. I'm done. And it would take so much time, so much work, so much effort to get off the rust that has piled up since 2003, speaking of myself. So, yeah, it's not the same old thing. But for Shawn, a guy, you know, even at whatever percent he is, could still go better than most people today, and making good psychology and making the right decisions from an athletic standpoint, could execute, you know, well enough. Working with AJ Styles, who's one of the best workers in the world right now, it'd be an instant classic. But I don't know. I think Shawn is so far down the road from, you know, like I said, those days in the mid-90s when he had heat with a lot of the dressing room, and Shawn's made up for all that and come back, his comeback that second part of his career when he had some of his even most epic matches, just went out. I think he's satisfied with his career. And just, you get in, you train your ass off, and then you're going to have another match. And I just think it's almost anticlimactic at this point.
It's weird. I mean, the match itself isn't weird, but if you look at it in its totality, it feels a little off because, it's like, what do you do? Is it just a one-off? Is it a...
What does it mean? I mean...
What does it mean?
He's done everything, you know, and, you know, AJ is one of my favorite workers right now. So, I mean, it'd be great. But, you know, because, you know, Shawn's a friend of mine, because I respect his work so much, I'm like, hey, man, I get it. The dude don't want to work no more. But anyway, let's talk about the Undertaker equation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we talk about that equation, because they couldn't find an opponent for AJ Styles, he's wrestling Shane McMahon. So
right.
You talked about the Shawn Michaels factor, that tweet that got eliminated. It never happened. It never culminated. So now he's going to work with Shane McMahon. Now, with no disrespect to Shane McMahon, who's a friend of mine, but you have one of the best workers in the world working with one of the managers. Manager of SmackDown?
Yes, he's the
Dude, you've got a tried and true worker with a personality who can work but does more talking.
Yeah.
How does that happen? I mean, how do you not have a dancing partner for one of the best workers in the world and a guy, to me, who is extremely important to this promotion, the WWE?
Did you not call up Shinsuke Nakamura early enough? Is it that Samoa Joe could have been slotted in here? Is it because you have injuries like Finn Balor, things get reconfigured? I don't know. You know, it's a little bit partially to blame to the brand split, which I think has been good. It's created a lot more opportunities, but then you have these kind of situations, and then your first option doesn't play out as you had hoped. So you go to 47-year-old Shane McMahon. The funny thing is, I think about Shane McMahon and where when Vince started on camera doing a lot more physical stuff, he was almost the same age, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. And, you know, we're not probably more than 10 years away from the next generation of McMahon starting to pop up in more permanent roles. You know, you see Shane's kids, they're probably about 10 and 11 now. Stephanie was, 19, 20 when she'd started on WWE TV. So there's a new crop of McMahons on the horizon, but it's kind of crazy to think about that. I remember Shane when he was still, you know, the boy wonder out there doing those crazy spots in the late 90s, and yet now he's still doing them. Last week on SmackDown, he did a diving elbow off the top rope through a table onto AJ to close out the show, and I went, oh my gosh. Now, they did something similar in the road to WrestleMania last year with Undertaker, where he did a crazy spot before Mania, and I remember thinking, man, save that for Mania. If they're showing that on TV, they're trying to give you the visual
right
for tease of what's to come at WrestleMania. So, you know, Shane's going to do something crazy. And I understand the Orlando set is massive and it looks awesome. I've seen some pictures that have leaked online. It's always cool to see that. And the Citrus Bowl is going to have a badass set. So I'm sure Shane's looking at that as a playground to have fun with. And for their match, I'm sure you're going to see some crazy spectacles.
And again, hey man, no disrespect to Shane. Shane's a friend of mine, but I'm just talking about, you know, as one of the best workers in the world, I just thought AJ Styles would be paired up with another, you know, high caliber worker just like himself. Court, quickly, Undertaker versus Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
God dang. Undertaker, WrestleMania 33. I don't know how he's done it. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. The staying power, not just from a character standpoint, from a physicality standpoint of being a human being. A lot of people might not think of Undertaker as a human being, but he is. He's flesh and blood. He's tough as nails. But he's going against Roman Reigns in this match. How do you see this thing shaking out?
Oh, I think they're going to bring it. And, you know, Taker, during his WrestleMania matches, he doesn't wrestle that often, so he tries to lay it out as much as he can and leave it all in the ring. And Roman Reigns, you know, really feels like he's really evolved, and I think he's stepped it up. I think you can see he wants to be a heel. We had his cousin Samu on our podcast last week. The Samoans are so old school, man. They don't really talk too much about what's up, but man, he said he wants to see him go heel, and he brought up a good point. If you look at the history of the Samoans, the Anuai family, they historically have always done their big business as heels. They've always been historically heels. It plays to their strengths. It's what they know. It's what they do and how they've just thrived. There's one exception to that rule, and that's The Rock. But the rest of the family has always been traditionally heels. And so, and I think Roman Reigns would be a fantastic heel. And I don't know if we're going to have that moment at WrestleMania with John Cena doing less and less on the road. And so many question marks about the top echelon for the babyfaces on the Raw side making towns every week. You know, you got to find a solution. If it's not Roman Reigns, who is it? And that they don't have an answer to right away. Is it Finn Balor? Well, he's gearing up. He's done a lot of house shows in the last 2 or 3 weeks here in the New York Northeast corridor. Maybe he can be that guy. He sells a lot of merch. The kids love him. My son loves Finn Balor, and a lot of kids do because he's got that demon thing. It's like Carnage from the Spider-Man comic. So he might be that guy, but until you know, Vince is not going to go with a question mark. He's going to go with a sure thing.
Man, I'll tell you what, Roman stepped up his work in the last few months. I still see him being a heel before he's universally accepted. I think he'll have a heel run first. Whether they do that in this case or not, wait to pull the trigger on that down the road, I don't know. But you're looking at The Undertaker, a guy who is not satisfied with anything but the best. So I know Roman Reigns is going to be there for him to give him his best. It'll be interesting to see the layout of this match, the timing of this match, because of, you know, two big physical cats. I don't need this to be a 25-minute classic. I want to see this thing well-paced. Not that you can't drag this one out. This has to be not wham-bam, but this has to be physicality, makes sense, high impact. Something's got to happen. Finish, boom, next match. I mean, I'm not talking you go out there in 5 minutes, but God dang right. it, this match doesn't need to dilly-dally. It doesn't need to be a 30-minute classic either.
No, I think you got to make it an efficient match, and whatever you're getting out of this, whether it's Roman Reigns being a vicious, dominating beast on The Undertaker, or whatever it is, you got to do it in a succinct amount of time. I wouldn't want to see this match again go long, and I think a lot of these matches aren't going to go long. If you look at this card, I mean, the match I think that you could budget to go long is the Jericho Owens match, and those guys are down to probably have a hell of a match and go the distance. I have no doubt they can deliver on that.
Well, and I think they should be given a fair amount of time to do whatever they want to do because of the epic build of this angle. Both guys doing outstanding work. Both guys great chemistry. Both guys mm-hmm. very good friends with each other. So however it shakes out, I really have a hard time seeing that not be an instant classic. Now they have to go out there and make it work for them. But to me, I think the pieces are all in the right place. It's just for them to go out there and execute it. And the way Jericho has always built his matches, there's been a lot of guys, Adam Cole, who was recently on the podcast again, you know, says that Chris Jericho was a huge influence on him. And, you know, Chris Jericho got himself over in every territory he was ever at. And mm-hmm. is a sure fame, Hall of Fame guy as soon as he quits the business and does something else. But he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He loves to throw, you know, those building blocks and peak it, you know, at the climax and in the right places. And Kevin Owens with that moveset and workmanship that he brings. I mean, he's a veteran guy who's a hellacious worker. So, I'm hoping those guys have a knockdown, drag out affair and have a bust ass match. Here's a match that I'm really worried about. I'm really thinking about because it's Bayley versus Charlotte versus Sasha Banks versus Nia Jax. And these 4-way matches can really be cluster mucks, and even a 3-way match because you're trying to cram 3 bodies and now there's 4 bodies into this championship match for the Raw Women's Belt. What are your thoughts on the fact that they're doing a 4-way?
Yeah, it's problematic for a few reasons. Nia Jax isn't ready for prime time. She really should still probably have been in NXT. She's got so much potential. I wish they could have worked out some sort of trade where she should go to somewhere like Stardom in Japan where she could learn that Aja Kong style. You know, I think she would be so cool doing that, like the spinning back fist or something like that. I think that would just work to her kind of unique qualities and as a special attraction. And you know, she's a monster and she shouldn't be kind of just shoehorned into something, and I think that's an injustice for her in this case. And Bayley, it's been weird how they booked her. It's very reminiscent of Rey Mysterio when he got the WWE world title in 06, and it was almost like we had to convince Vince to make him the champ, and Vince just didn't think for various reasons he was the guy, and kind of was like, I told you so, as he booked him to, you know, kind of be put in bad spots as the champ, and it didn't work out well. And it wasn't Rey's fault, it's just how he was programmed in those matches. And Bayley's the kind of similar thing. It's almost like you feel like they're not buying into it, and she should have been chasing going into WrestleMania. Instead, she won the title, which is anticlimactic before Mania, and now is in this hodgepodge 4-way. Sasha Banks is terrific. Charlotte, terrific. Bayley's terrific. But it's just this match could be really, like you said, it could be cumbersome in how they do it. They could have a great match too. It's just hard when you have so many.
Man, there's so many moving parts in there.
Yeah.
4 different women. To your point, Nia Jax has a boatload of potential.
Yes.
Very talented. She's a bigger lady. Beautiful. but she's just a little green. These other three ladies, they're all three veterans. I think they're all damn good workers. And I love that women's championship, but I just don't like four-way matches. I hope they turn out a gangbuster match, but... You know, and working these matches with Nia being a little bit on the green side, but again, great potential for her, but a little bit on the green side, by the time you got to dispose of people, put them on the apron, put them on the floor, let them sell so other people can go out and do stuff. And it's just sometimes, man, it just looks like with you remove the feeling and the emotion of the match, and you're just going through the paces or the moves. And you can see that. And when that happens, that's not good.
Yeah, you know, there's been something weird with the chemistry with Bayley and Charlotte. You know, I noticed at the Royal Rumble, and it's just like something was a little off for whatever reason, just slightly off, and I can't figure out why and what. Sometimes it's just the day and what happens, and sometimes you just don't have a good one. But, man, I don't know how that match is going to play out. I want to see them have a great match. Charlotte's a big-time player. I think Paul Heyman recently said she could be the first woman to ever main event and close out a WrestleMania. I could see that.
She probably could, but when you talk about talent, maybe there's a chemistry mismatch there. I mean, you know, there was people that sometimes I didn't have great chemistry with, and we'd go out there and we'd try hard, we'd have an okay match. Mm-hmm. When you look at Bayley's chemistry with Sasha Banks, just through the roof.
Yeah.
Those two ladies are badass together.
Yep.
So, you know, sometimes it's almost like when it's a pro wrestling thing or an MMA thing, some people just don't match up. You can have two world-class fighters out there that kind of cancel out each other's skill, and it's a snore fest. It's like, Jesus Christ, these guys are both badasses. I expected more than this. The matchup just doesn't work. So sometimes that happens in our business. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Now, are they going to give this thing enough time, or are they going to rush it and just, you know, have it for the spectacle? Someone's going to win, and it's not going to mean anything.
First year, they made it special, and it's kind of slowly lost its specialness. Not slowly, I mean, it's very rapidly lost its uniqueness or specialness, because it was kind of like you thought the first year, okay, that person's earmarked to be something big on the flip side of WrestleMania with the new season of WWE kicking off the next day. That doesn't seem to be the case. We have Big Show, who was slotted originally to face Shaq, now in this. Mojo Rawley, Apollo Crews, Kurt Hawkins, lots of guys. Maybe it's a great showcase for someone like Braun Strowman. Maybe somewhere a match they just give to the Big Show to go over, give the Giant a big one. I don't know. You know, it's too bad that
Shaq, whatever happened, you know, passed out on this thing or tapped out or didn't decide to do it, because, you know, this is going to be Big Show's chance to work with Shaq. I mean, Jesus Christ, Shaq's a big deal. No pun intended, because the dude's 7'2", he's a big deal. So the fact that that match is going to happen, I don't think, you know, certainly Big Show's not going to get the same payoff he's going to get working with Shaq.
No.
And if he doesn't win this, I mean, you know, Jesus Christ, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is built for guys like the Big Show, who happens to be a giant just like Andre the Giant. So if Braun Strowman's in the thing, Braun Strowman needs to win. Great. I actually liked, when I look at the announced participants so far, Mojo Rawley, I enjoyed that promo he did on Monday Night Raw or SmackDown a week or two ago, talking about getting his shot or entering himself into, and then Dolph Ziggler came and gave him a heads up about, hey man, you got to earn it. It was actually a good promo by the kid. And so I don't know anything about his character. He's a big enough person, good size, but that promo was good for me, and so it was good for him. So he's starting to get a little bit of my interest. So you got a lot of guys in there, but there's only one or two guys that should win. It'll be whichever guy wins, they need to run with. And so if Braun Strowman is in that match, Braun Strowman needs to win it. He doesn't need to come in second place. He doesn't need to be eliminated third to last or whatever. He needs to go over, not the top rope.
Yeah, and I want to see him put on a show. I want to see him throw out several guys, not just struggle and get the last guy over and he gets his arm raised. I want to see a demonstration of violence with Braun Strowman at WrestleMania somewhere on this card, whether it's this or something with Goldberg and Brock. I want to see a demonstration of violence from the big man, because this is his coming out year. It really is. It has to be. And he's ready for it. They need him to be ready for it.
Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin for the Intercontinental Championship.
Well, Dean needs to show us the same sort of stuff he did when he stole the show as part of the Shield. Those qualities that made us he grabbed us. He needs to show that again. He's kind of, in my opinion, lost a little bit of his mojo. Maybe he's regressed. Maybe he's just a little flat right now, but he needs to find himself, get that mojo going again. And maybe this is an opportunity. As Vince McMahon says, every night is a new opportunity to, get yourself on the right path.
What about Baron Corbin? I still don't know a lot about this young man. I've talked to him a couple times,
right,
but I haven't seen enough of his work because I don't get a chance to watch the show enough.
Yeah, he's come along pretty solidly. I saw a match recently with his on SmackDown, and he's really picking it up. I really like it in terms of the mechanics. The presentation in terms of his persona and grabbing you, it's not quite there. But I think he's a guy that needs a little bit of that WWE Star Maker machine. You need to package him and bundle him. I don't think just Baron Corbin as is going to get it done. I think, honestly, if you put some sort of face paint on him or some like skull paint or something, made him a little bit more like a old school Vampiro type gimmick, that might work for a guy like that, because he's tall, he has these brooding eyes. I mean, something just a little different, some adjustments on him. And honestly, he's a guy that would really benefit from a mouthpiece. Having a manager would really help him, because he's still not quite there on the mic, but they want him to be slotted in a bigger way, obviously, on SmackDown. Get him with someone that can talk. Get him a mouthpiece, and I think you could get a lot more out of it. And plus, it's another trick up your sleeve in a match. And for a guy that's developing, a greener guy, that's very beneficial.
I will say this about the kid. He's got a good look, but the thing about him that I like the most is the gimmick, the lone wolf gimmick. Dude, I'm a big Lone Wolf McQuade of Chuck Norris fame fan. Mm-hmm. Way back in the days. I mean, now Baron Corbin, the Lone Wolf, does things by himself. That helps define that character. I mean, to me, if the kid can get over, that merch will sell and sell like gangbusters, because it's such a cool gimmick. Problem, you've got to get over first before you sell that merch, but that's
right.
A cool gimmick. So he's got great things to work with. The fact that he's got the good size, he's got a good look, he's got to come up with a little bit more, workmanship. Like you said, some work on the horn, if not get a manager, but the gimmick is money if he can get it over. Quickly, I think the Neville versus Austin Aries match could be an instant classic as soon as these guys have it, if it just doesn't become about a spot fest or a moveset sequence. Both guys, I really enjoy each of their work. Neville is badass. He has heel turn with that attitude and swagger that he now has been a breath of fresh air. Austin Aries is just a tried and true pro. He can work his ass off. A great look. Good gimmick. If these guys match up with great chemistry, I haven't seen them work before. Maybe someone else has. Maybe they. I don't know what their story is, but both guys are hellacious workers. I just expect these guys to blow the roof off the place.
Yeah, I agree. If given time, this can be a great statement match for the division, which, is still under a year old. And to be factored into WrestleMania is a big deal. It's an important decision. I'm glad they did it. Now you got to show them the good faith and give them time to showcase this title match. I think Austin Aries, I know Austin Aries and Neville can deliver. Give them the time. Of all the matches, this is one of those matches along with Owens and Jericho. You can give the time to them, and they will not let you down. And Neville, he's really turned it up. His heel promos have been fantastic, and Austin Aries has been fantastic too. And it's great to see Austin Aries on WrestleMania. He's a great talent that's forever been around, and he was, this deal, he was on the cusp of a WWE opportunity, and now to see him there in 2017 is great. So give this guy some time. I think they can do something special.
Well, they got to give him time, dude. They tell him, man, all of a sudden you got 10 minutes bell to bell.
It's hard to tell a story in 10.
Because it's going to be too quick of a story. And as quick as these guys move, the move sets, the things that these guys can do, dude, I want to see them sell. I want to see them register. I want to see all this. Give them time. God dang it.
Right.
I want to go too long and just give them time. Now, I don't know. The Good Brothers versus Enzo and Big Cass, two friends of mine, and Cesaro and Sheamus. I don't know anything about the Good Brothers.
Who's that? The Good Gallows and Anderson.
Oh, I didn't know they were calling them the Good Brothers.
Man, they are good brothers.
Dude, I just got finished talking to Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson.
Yeah.
God dang, well, I didn't know they just started calling them the Good Brothers. I've been watching Southpaw Regional Wrestling on YouTube and fell in love with that. There's a little four-episode miniseries, whatever, with John Cena as the head anchor. And I called both of those guys out of the blue and sent Jericho, pretty much every single one of them that I had numbers. I said, God dang, I love Southpaw Wrestling. So I didn't know that they were calling them the Good Brothers. God dang it. If they would let those guys do what they're doing on Southpaw, do it on the main roster, holy smokes, you talk about over. They would be over. This match is going to be tough. You got, you know, six guys in there. Was it an elimination match or whatever? Triple threat, whatever. I'm friends with all the guys in this match. This is going to be a cluster. This is going to be one that I don't know if they're going to give enough time, but God dang it, they let the Good Brothers be like they are on Southpaw. That would be entertaining. Enzo, obviously a great mouthpiece, and what a promo. Big Cass coming along. He's got to keep working. That guy could have a hell of a singles career. And Cesaro and Sheamus, you know, God dang, Cesaro continues to be a hell of a worker and still trying to get over. And Sheamus, you know, kind of, he's still there. Needs to change a few things, but we'll see what happens in this match. I don't know what to make out of this.
Look for something impactful from Big Cass. I think they're going to find an opportunity to make him look great in this match. Cesaro's going to be the glue that keeps this thing together straight up. I really do believe that.
Yep.
And you're right. Gallows and Anderson have incredible personality. When you let them freestyle and just flow and ad-lib, that's something that's WWE needs to give them more time to do, not give them necessarily scripted stuff in front of the entrance set or something like that. They had that alter ego, Tex Ferguson, originally known as Sex Ferguson, when they had a podcast for MLW Radio. They did about 80 episodes when they were with New Japan, along with AJ Styles. And my God, you hear the personality of them. They were just recording in the Tokyo Dome hotel. And man, they were just so funny. And it was so ridiculous and very, you know, sophomoric humor. But man, I was dying laughing. And you get to see that on the new show. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's awesome. And they changed the name to Tex, so it's a little bit more WWE friendly, but he's got a lot of personality. So does Carl.
Dude, what you don't get a chance to see their personality. Watch Southpaw Regional Wrestling. That's going to be my recommended viewing at the end of the podcast. Okay, let's wrap this thing up. Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship.
Man, Bray Wyatt's going to get a win here, and they're going to start solidifying him as the top heel champion, and they'll eventually have someone to chase for it. Randy Orton sorely has disappointed me on this run. They did a deal on SmackDown last week where it was really cool, really awesome concept for an angle where the lights went dark, they flickered, and when they went back on during an interview with Randy Orton and Renee hauled ass out of there, and all these sheep heads were behind him. All these masked guys were just all over Randy Orton, look at him, and they jumped him and beat him down. The next thing you know, they're holding him back, and Bray Wyatt's talking in his face, taunting him. And Randy Orton is a robot. Randy Orton isn't trying to struggle to break free like John Cena would or you would. He's just sitting there calmly, not registering with his face, not showing any emotion, and Bray Wyatt's just talking about his demise, and there's no struggle. It doesn't feel real. Everyone's delivering except for Randy Orton. It felt so wasted, and I'm like, come on, man, you're so damn talented. What gives here? Because this was an awesome angle, but there was just, he's just emotionally flat and so damn good in the ring, and this is such a great opportunity for him as well. But I just felt like it was a squandered opportunity because Randy didn't show me anything there. And I haven't felt Randy buying into this for whatever reason. He's doing all these things. They give him a lot of cool spots, but I don't feel necessarily that he's buying into it. And it transfers when I watch as a viewer at home.
Damn, that's very interesting because I didn't see that. But I saw when Randy joined up with Bray Wyatt, that intrigued me. I hadn't seen any of the follow-up stuff that you just mentioned, so I can't speak to it. But Jesus Christ, once the bell rings, you've got all the talent in the world there. Bray Wyatt's a damn good worker. Randy Orton's a hell of a worker. Bray's character is so over. I don't know so much about Randy's. The WWE Championship is on the line. You got to really focus on making Bray. If you're going to make Bray, people think he's already made. No, he's not already made. He's still in the making process. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to make Bray, this is the time to make Bray. So then he needs that win. We talked about Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. We know what
here's a crazy thing about this Wyatt match. I just realized that you have maybe the first time ever two third generation wrestlers fighting for the WWE title. Blackjack Mulligan, the grandfather of Bray Wyatt. Sorry to break kayfabe, everyone. Yep. And then you have Randy Orton, who is the grandson of Bob Orton Sr. I don't think that's ever happened. That's a JR stat. That's something JR would put over in a match if he was calling it. It's kind of cool when you think about that.
Very
a lot
cool.
of family history.
You got two third-generation cast going for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I would be remiss if I did not mention the SmackDown Women's Championship Invitational. They don't really have a clear direction for Alexa Bliss right now, so they decided that literally every woman on the roster who's available to compete that night will get a shot at her. They've teased returns, debuts, and even a gimmick match. Give me the story here. I don't know anything. I know Alexa Bliss is a champ. Well, what are you doing?
I think that's what they're saying to everyone in the writer's room right now. I think this is one of those things where it might be like a gauntlet style match, because I've heard that they might be bringing in some women from the past. There's been a lot of names, a lot of speculation about maybe Victoria coming back, maybe even Kelly Kelly coming back. That remains to be seen. So maybe you'll have a few cameos from those champions from yesteryear. We'll see. But it's a little hodgepodge. I'd rather seen just a focus with Becky Lynch or Mickie James. I think the Mickie James story could have been really compelling. Since
well, Mickie James,
it's all about the comeback.
Off. Yeah,
yeah, and she's got a cool story coming back. It's like, you know, super young new versus the last generation, and the story with Mickie James coming back is just a great story. There's a great human story with Mickie James coming back as a mother, you know, young mother. Maybe it's too similar to the Goldberg story, but it's on a different brand. So as Vince would say, it's a totally different deal, man, or pal. So I think I would have done probably Alexa Bliss versus Mickie James and just kept it one-on-one. But again, WWE really likes to put the entire roster or as many people as they can on WrestleMania for morale purposes, for payoff purposes. They want everyone to feel like they're factored in. And
I
so,
know, and with the good of that is also, you know, the downside of that, which is so many bodies in there, you can't make rhyme or reason out of a lot of things, and some people don't get a chance to shine. And sometimes the people are shortchanged because of it's that, and, you know, yeah, I'd like to see her, you know, in a single would be great. And again, and you know, I'm such a fan of Mickie James, you know, I don't, you know, she had a good run, but I mean, God dang, she was one of the best women workers in the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, really polished, and you know, just now it's great to see her get another opportunity to work in WWE, and especially with some of the younger women, because she can be a coach slash player out there too, and that is invaluable to WWE and for the women.
And Alexa Bliss, I mean, she's got a bright future. Very talented, very pretty, but she's still a bit on the green side. But she has all the markings of a great heel right now, but she's still a little bit on the green side. So all of a sudden, if you're going to try to throw a bunch of different people at her, you know, more stuff to add to the memory bank. And, you know, without that, you know, repetition of being in big matches, this is obviously, I guess, her first WrestleMania. High pressure, 80,000 some odd people there. You know, can she, you know, she's going to have to carry that thing. But they need people out there that can help her. You know, again, going back to like a Mickie James. But anyway, hey, man, we shot the breeze, talked about the business. We caught up on my remodel. It's going okay. The show started off to be a real cluster. Regained my composure. We said we'd call it in the ring. So, Court Bauer, MLW Radio, I appreciate you joining me. Please plug your show one more time there in Orlando coming up very quickly.
Yes. First of all, everyone check out MLWRadio.com. Jim Cornette, Bruce Pritchard, Conrad Thompson, Something to Wrestle With is a great show. They do a great thing there. And then this Thursday, Wally Mania 3, tickets still on sale at MLW.com. $15 standing room only GA ticket. We might even have a few golden tickets left for the meet and greet with the New Japan guys. It's a who's who on the podcast panel. You can learn all about this at MLW.com. It is the hottest party of the weekend. It's the kickoff for your WrestleMania weekend in Orlando, downtown Orlando, this Thursday. Check it out.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. I want to thank Court Bauer of MLW Radio for being my guest today. Good talking to you about the business and doing a preview of WrestleMania 33. I'm going to give you guys something to watch. I've been hearing about this Southpaw Regional Wrestling on the internet last few weeks, months, whatever it was. I finally started watching that damn show. There's only 4 episodes. Get on YouTube and type in Southpaw Regional Wrestling and let me know what you think about it when you watch it at questions@steveaustinshow.com. God dang it. I called up damn near the whole crew that was on this show and told them what a good job they did on this damn show and how much I enjoyed it. That's how good it is. And if you need something else to watch, go to WWE Network, type in WrestleMania 25 on the search bar, and then watch Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker from WrestleMania 25. One of the best matches, if not the best match, in the history of professional wrestling at WrestleManias. Damn, those guys knocked it out of the park. Anyway, no plugs from me today. We're going to say thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. So thanks to the Books. Use my promo code Steve to get 20% off your order. And just a reminder that the Steve Austin Show is also a participant in the Amazon Associates program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com. You can link to Amazon at podcast1.com by clicking on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Hey, the 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, world-class idiot, and raconteur extraordinaire. Join me for my new podcast, The Raven Effect. Every Monday here on the Jericho Network on Podcast One, we'll be covering current events and any and all topics that can be properly bantered. Download and listen to the show on podcast1.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes. Quote the Raven, nevermore.